All righty, let's call the meeting of the Senate Transportation Committee to order. Our apologies, we're a little bit behind today. Let the record reflect it is 1:51 p.m. Thursday, April 28th. Present today are Vice Chair Schauer, Senator Keel, and myself, Chair Myers. That gives us a quorum to conduct business. Staff in the committee today, as usual, we have Nancy Hemingway from Senate Records. Talia has joined us again as our moderator, and always, as always, Michaela Anderson is my committee aide. So today we're going to be hearing public testimony to start with on Senate Bill 231, the Alaska Railroad Corporation Executive Budget Act. At this time, I will open public testimony on SB 231. That is there anyone in the room who would like to testify on SB 231? Sir, if you would please join us at the table. And if you could put your name and any affiliation on the record, and then please proceed.
My name is Jack Brown. I'm from South Anchorage. I'm part of the Flying Crown 50 homeowner network there on the airstrip in South Anchorage. Thank you, Chair Myers, for the opportunity to testify today. I've been fighting this battle with the Alaska Railroad for 9 years now. Their long-running lack of budgetary and policy oversight has led directly to the gutting of the value of my home. No Alaskan or American should ever have to go through what I and many others in our area have gone through. Hopefully my testimony here today will be helpful so that others can better understand what's driving this issue and help affect meaningful change. What I've done is I've written a hypothetical letter from our Alaska Federal District Judge Kindred, who recently rewrote 140 years of right-of-way law against Alaskans, and in the process made a complete mockery of our Constitution and settled Supreme Court law. The letter is written to Homesteader Mr. Spearstead, of who I'm a successor, and all of the World War I and II veterans and gold miners and all those that came to Homestead and settled in Alaska. And this should take me about 6 to 7 minutes. I hope that's okay. Dear Mr. Spearstead, congratulations on the April 17, 1950 signing of your new federal homestead patent. The U.S. thanks you for your hardships you're willing to endure in this challenging environment and your adventurous spirit to help settle the last frontier. It's people like you who will set the stage for a prosperity in this great land for generations to come. As you're well aware, sir, the Alaska Railroad transits and completely divides your new homestead. And the following very simple language is found within your patent. It says, quote, accepting and reserving, however, to the U.S. a right-of-way for the construction of railroads, telegraph, and telephone lines in accordance with the Act of March 12, 1914. This simple language would seem to state the obvious. The U.S. has awarded you supreme title to land and divested itself of all right, title, and interest in the property with the new federal homestead and land patent conveyed to you. However, just like a road or a canal, the U.S. must reserve the right to continue to safely operate the train through your homestead and requires a right-of-way to do so. Unfortunately, it's not so simple. I'm writing to you today to ensure that you understand clearly that, despite what may seem obvious in the patent language, the actual far-reaching implications to you, your heirs and successors of having the Alaska Railroad as your neighbor are not addressed within the patent language and are quite extensive. Let me explain. I've defined for the U.S. that the actual intent of this sentence is to give the U.S. the fee equivalent authority to fence you out and otherwise permanently deny you any access whatsoever across the right-of-way for purposes of improving your private homestead property. However, if you have the financial means, present and future access may, quote unquote, be negotiated at the sole discretion of the railroad and its U.S.-owned commercial real estate division via annual lease fees and payments calculated by the square foot at current market rates. You should further be warned that these rising market rates could increase rapidly and prove cost prohibitive to you and your heirs and successors either now or in the future. Additionally, any agreed-upon lease or other access to your homestead can be rescinded at any time for any reason whatsoever by the U.S. now or in the future with 30 days' notice if you're unable to pay escalating access and other right-of-way use fees. To further clarify, sir, in your area, the U.S. only requires roughly half of the right-of-way acreage through your homestead to safely operate the train or perhaps to build a second track in the future. The remaining portion of your fee simple right-of-way property has been designated for non-railroad residential and commercial real estate revenue generating operations executed at the sole discretion of the U.S. I realize that this may be a shock and confusing to you and other homesteaders, but I assure you this is the correct interpretation of the law. Even though Congress put an end to land-ground railroads in America in 1875 to avoid this exact issue for settlers like you, the land-ground railroad, for all practical purposes, continues alive and well through your homestead and throughout the Alaska Rail Belt. Although technically the U.S. recognizes you as the serving owner in fee of the 200-foot right-of-way land and the dirt under the tracks, you have no legal right of access or control over any of these right-of-way lands, including those large portions of the right-of-way acreage completely unneeded for the current or future safe operation of the train. Again, sir, it's our privilege to welcome and congratulate you on your new Alaskan Federal Homestead land patent. We apologize if denying you access across the homestead we've just conveyed to you causes you any financial or other hardships. We do note, however, that you do indeed have access to some of your homestead property without having to trespass on private railroad land. You're quite fortunate in this regard, as many homesteaders are discovering that they have no lawful access to any buildable homestead acreage due to the right-of-way location. They simply have no choice other than to try and pay whatever the railroad demands or give up on their dreams of homesteading in Alaska. So again, I must warn you that because the U.S. has held back a 200-foot swath of private property within your homestead, it's critical that you plan your future time and investments into your property very carefully. Just because there aren't fences in place today doesn't mean you won't be denied access or have to pay to avoid fences in the future or be fenced out entirely if you can't afford it or refuse to pay. There is no permanent access across the right-of-way in your homestead. The right-of-way across your land for all practical purposes is fee simple, land-grant railroad, and everything but name. Thank you, Judge Kindred for the Alaska Federal District Court, 2022.
Thank you, Mr. Brown. Mm-hmm. With that, appreciate your testimony, sir.
Thank you, sir.
All right. With that, anyone else in the room who wishes to testify? Seeing none, we're going to go online. So we're going to start with Mr. Robert Gastrock. If you could put your name, your location, and your affiliation, if any, on the record, and proceed with your testimony, please.
Yes. Can you hear me?
Yes, sir.
Okay. My name is Bob Gastrock. For approximately 45 years, I owned a residential lot and had my home a couple of doors down from Mr. Brown. And he mentioned that he had been working this issue regarding the railroad right-of-way for some 9 years. And I'm here to say that I've worked it more than 11 years, having lived in the house when the railroad was owned and operated by the federal government. And I just sold my home and moved away last year. I provided written testimony because I wasn't sure I was going to be able to call in today. And I hope that you received that. I sent it to you, Chairman Myers, and with copies to the other members of the committee. I won't regurgitate that information because I think it stands for itself. I simply like to summarize in saying that I sincerely believe that Senate Bill 231 goes a long way to providing executive and legislative oversight of the Alaska Railroad that has been lacking since the Railroad Corporation was formed back in the 1980s. Frankly, I think a lot of the policies and actions taken by the railroad over these years have been ill-conceived and detrimental to public access and private property rights. the railroad consistently acts with impunity, and Senate Bill 231, if passed and enacted, would be a great step towards establishing the much-needed accountability. The railroad pattern that I've witnessed over 45 years or so, since the state owned it, they often choose to play the chameleon role. When they need funds and are soliciting grant money and other revenues from the state or federal government, they project themselves as a state agency. But when they choose to, they prefer to hide behind the veil of a private corporation in terms of disclosing financial and other information to the public. Furthermore, there have been several instances where they've directly ignored statutory requirements when it suits their purpose. And to give you just two examples, the patents that were received and accepted by the Alaska Railroad Corporation by the President Pat Gamble in 2006 were done without legislative approval as required by statute. And that the mere acceptance of those patents has created countless clouds on title among the property I owned and the property Jack owns, because that patent was superimposed on the patent that was granted to Mr. Spearstead, and the railroad refuses to acknowledge that. Furthermore, a couple of years ago, some of you at least may remember that the legislature amended Alaska Statute 4240, Sections 350 and 410, which said that the railroad could not claim exclusive use that it was claiming in areas unless in any area that they could not demonstrate that the federal government had such rights to transfer to the state in the 1980s. Flying Crown, you may be aware of the fact there's a lawsuit in progress right now. Flying Crown simply requested the railroad to honor the wording of that statute and provide proof that the federal government owned fee title to the land or something other than just a surface easement. Flying Crown presented a complete chain of title report showing that there was no mention of any interest by the federal government in terms of land ownership of any portion of that right-of-way that runs through Tom Spearstead's homestead. And as in response to that, instead of acknowledging the facts there, the railroad filed suit in federal court against Flying Crown. And that litigation is still in progress. Final thing, I just like to say again, I can't implore you enough to support Senate Bill 231 and bring some much needed oversight to Alaska Railroad operations. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Gastrock. Next, we'll be moving to Sarah Taylor. If you could please put your name, your location, and any affiliation on the record and proceed.
Thank you so much, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Sarah Taylor, S-A-R-A-T-A-Y-L-O-R. I am a resident of Anchorage, a daughter of the West, a mother to Alaska's children, and a citizen of the United States of America. I am representing myself. I am here to defend the principles of governance that keep us safe, strong, and prosperous, because I believe it is extremely important right now that we concern ourselves with each other's well-being and acknowledge the true cost of our comforts and advantages. I thank you very much for the opportunity to testify in favor of SB 231. I'm grateful to the committee for its patience and its leadership in spending time, when time is at a premium, evaluating the merits of a much needed and long overdue alignment of our governmental structure with our foundational governmental principles. The state representative at the March hearing presented this issue as a philosophical question, and while that may be true in the official sense, it's quite the opposite at the community level. This is an existential question about who we are and how we propose to engage with each other. The Alaska Railroad Corporation has engaged in activities and adopted policies that I, as an Alaskan, find reprehensible and contrary to the principles that I endeavor to uphold in our federal and Alaska constitutions. And as such, I am duty-bound to use the tools at my disposal to effect meaningful and appropriate change. The Alaska Railroad Corporation, for example, claims to own approximately 12,000 acres of land in something akin to fee simple along a 500-plus mile railway corridor, including submerged land. When I approached the executive branch, they did not have authority over the corporation. And if you do not have authority to speak and influence the activities and policies of the Alaska Railroad Corporation, then neither does the public. In 1982, the same year that the Alaska Railroad Transfer Act was being debated in Congress, the United States Supreme Court found a state of Illinois grant of 1,000 acres of submerged land in Lake Michigan to the Illinois Central Railroad was revocable because those lands were held in trust for the public. The court found that a title to a state's submerged land is different from the title from which the United States holds in the public lands, which are open to preemption and sale. It is a title that is held in trust for the people of the state that they may enjoy the navigation of the waters, carry on commerce over them, have the liberty of fishing therein free from the obstruction or interference of private parties, which can only be discharged by the management and control of the property in which the public has an interest. Alaskans have a constitutional right to free access to and use of the navigable waterways. If the state received title to submerged lands along the Alaska Railroad right-of-way, public trust doctrine protections cannot be disregarded by state officials, and they guarantee access to fish, wildlife, and water resources in Alaska. Alaska Statute 3805-126C is not ambiguous about this. And you are the trustees with respect to the management of these lands in the public interest. The corporation has unequivocally said it can exclude Alaskans from these lands for any reason. The corporation is an entity of the state. I would like to ask the committee to please examine the strong merits of SB 231. As you might have heard in testimony provided earlier, the feelings that you get when an entity of the government lives up to the most paranoid, delusional, anarchistic, lowest of the low expectations. Being mad does not begin to cover it. It's a breaking of faith. Now, I'm paying off a law degree that might as well have been in creative writing, which I would much rather have gotten a degree in to avoid the pain of seeing the things that I have learned, the things that I believe in, and the things that I would fight to preserve turn into platitudes and lies in the face of that tired old chestnut that anyone bigger than you can get whatever they want. Please do not dismiss this opportunity for oversight. Thank you for the chance to testify before you today.
Thank you, Ms. Taylor. Next, we're going to go to Bonnie Wolstad. If you could please put your name, your location, and your affiliation on the record.
This is Bonnie Wolstad, North Pole, Alaska, representing myself.
Please proceed.
I agree that this is a step in the right direction. The Alaska Railroad does not answer to anybody. In 2003, unbeknownst to the legislature or the governor's office, from what I've been told, the railroad went to Congress and repealed sections 1208 and 1209, which was the reversionary clause of ARTA. In other words, if and when they were to ever move their railroad, the adjacent property was to revert back to the adjacent property owners. By going and having that repealed, they no longer had to do that under that section. With the help of Tammy Wilson, I was able to get that reversionary clause language put back in through a bill through the last legislature. But it was not fixed for the rest of the line. You've heard testimony regarding the recent suit out of Anchorage where they are suing a group of homeowners for Flying Crown. And again, that was something that the governor had sent a letter to them saying to drop the suit, so they did not follow direction from essentially our chief executive. There needs to be some way that the railroad will answer to the people. I don't know if it is to expand the board to require that seats on the board be people that are adjacent to the property owners or not, but this is a step in the right direction, and there needs to be accountability to the people. The U.S. patents that were issued before statehood do not address an exclusive easement whatsoever in the patents. They do address for the railroad to be able to cross and that there be a easement, but that is all that is addressed. To now go forward and put through an exclusive easement is, in a sense, an inverse take. And as the gentleman before addressed with the interim conveyance and then the final conveyance to the railroad, that all of that, where they are taking away the property rights of the current property owners, is indeed an inverse take. Thank you very much for this chance to testify.
Thank you, Ms. Wilstead. And finally, we're going to be going to Charles Kopp. If you could put your name, your location, and your affiliation on the record. Mr. Kopp? Yeah, I'm sure you popped on last time. Mr. Kopp, do you happen to be muted, maybe?
Mr. Chairman?
There we go. Yes, sir.
Yes, I'm only standing by for a question only.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Kopp.
Yes, thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
All right. With that, that exhausts our list for online. Do we have anyone else in the room who wishes to testify on SB 231? Seeing none, I will close testimony on SB 231. Just want to state thank you for to everyone who testified. Thank you for waiting as we were a little bit behind today. And appreciate your time. All right, with that, we're going to be setting SB 231 aside, and we are going to be moving on to Senate Bill 166, the geobond bill, and we're going to be starting by adopting a committee substitute. Senator Schauer, do you have a motion?
I do. Mr. Chair, I move the committee substitute for Senate Bill 166, Work Order 32-GS2543/Bravo be adopted as the working document.
And I will object for purposes of discussion. I'd like to we'll take a brief at ease. All right, back on the record. I'd like to invite my committee aide, Michaela Anderson, to the table to go over a summary of changes.
For the record, Michaela Anderson, Chief of Staff to Senator Myers and Committee Aide for Senate Transportation. Going through, the original amount of the GEO bond was $325,175,000. The new total amount is $391,171,258. We removed two projects from the original bill, the Kinnick Armport Infrastructure $175 million, due to the fact that that money wasn't directly going to a specific project or grantee. It was questionably legal. Also, Juneau Access, the $25 million there, because it never put a shovel in ground, which is crucial to being legal for a geobond project. Starting on page 2, I'll be reading the projects that have been added. Municipality of Anchorage, Port of Alaska Modernization, $75 million. City of Amonic, Port of Amonic Rehabilitation, $8.5 million. Kodiak Island Borough, Kodiak Fire Station is now $8 million as opposed to $15 million. Lynn Canal Transmission Corporation, Northern Segment of the Southeast Intertide Project, $5 million. City of Stewardship Transfer Rail Extension, $4.5 million, page 3. There We will have a amendment brought forward by Senator Myers later to remove Southeast Conference from line 3 of page 3 for the Kenai River Bluff Stabilization. But that wasn't there before. Going down to Department of Education, we have a list of projects. These were primarily gathered from the School Major Maintenance Fund list as well as deferred maintenance. American Charter Academy School, $5.2 million. Anderson K-12 School, partial roof replacement, $1,015,574. Chenega Bay K-12 School renovation, $5,759,942. Copper River District Office roof replacement, $581,556. Craig Elementary School rehabilitation, $1,905,489. Craig Middle School rehabilitation, $5,668,124. Eagle River Elementary School improvements, $5,422,355. Galena Interior Learning Academy composite building renovation, $5,904,081. Cake School heating upgrades, $191,618. Matsu Central School, $10.4 million. Mount Edgecombe High School dining hall renovation, $4,741,000. Tetiklik K-12 school renovation, $6,972,263. Valdez High School and Herman Hutchins Elementary School domestic water piping replacement, $830,671. And West High School partial roof replacement, $4,322,259. A conforming change, if you will. There's no longer a HESS section of this bill. There is now Department of Family and Community Services, as this bill, if it was to pass, would be post enactment of the split. So in Family and Community Services, we have Alaska Veteran Pioneer Home Roof Replacement, $2,268,000. Fairbanks Pioneer Home Roof and Flooring Replacement, $2,441,800. Those two projects came from the previously vetted SB 74. Sitka Pioneer Home Service Entrance Door Replacement, $91,000. That came from deferred maintenance. The Department of Health has a allocation for $36,400 for Sitka Public Health Center handicap ramp repairs and remodels. The Department of Labor and Workforce Development has a $1 million allocation for AvTech Student Housing and Services Center repairs and renovations. The Department of Military and Veteran Affairs has a $200,000 allocation for Cossaby Armory Fire Alarm Panels Project. Department of Natural Resources has $887,000 for the Alaska Plant Material Center renovation and upgrades. That was derived from the deferred maintenance list. And that is the adding all of the $10,000 projects for the PMC for one allocation. For Department of Public Safety, we have the Alaska State Troopers Training Academy, $1.5 million. That was from the deferred maintenance list. And Interior Law Enforcement Training Facility, $14 million. That is a project that has been put in CAPSIS and touches about 12 house districts for the last few years. Department of Transportation and Public Facilities, the new projects are the Homer Slope Stability and Erosion Mitigation Program for $3,725,000. Mainline, this is the state match for a mainline ferry vessel replacement, $26 million. And the North State Office Building Parking Garage for $5 million. University of Alaska has all these projects were derived from the university's geobond list, so geobondable projects, if you will. The new ones are Anchorage Campus Energy Performance Upgrades, $11,171,000. Bartlett and Moore Hall modernization renewal went up about $2 million due to inflation and new cost estimates from the university. Juneau Campus Anderson Scuba Locker and Lab Repurpose, $350,000. Fire and Emergency Services Training and Education Facility Replacement, $41,800,000. $1,000. Kenai, Homer, Matsu, Kodiak, and Valdez Campus HVAC Healthy Building Upgrades, $4,429,000. And Ketchikan Campus Maritime Center Roof Replacement, $800,000. We removed the old Section 8, which basically said that OMB could ask for and request general funds to pay for the bond package before the bonds were issued. That section has been removed, so now essentially they have to wait until the bond is issued to be able to fund these projects. And that is the summary of changes.
All righty. Thank you, Ms. Anderson. With that, I'm going to remove my objection. Seeing no further objection, the CS is adopted as our working document. Is there further discussion on the bill? Seeing none at the moment, we do have one conceptual amendment that we need to take care of. I will go ahead and move conceptual amendment number one.
I'll object for purposes of discussion.
Thank you, Senator Schauer. So the conceptual amendment is on page 3, line 3, to remove the words Southeast Conference. This was a drafting error when we got this the CS back from Lead Legal. And it's for the Kenai River Bluff Stabilization Project. That is not a Southeast project. It's not going through Southeast Conference. It was simply a drafting error, so we just need to take care of that technicality. Senator Keel.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Good catch. Do we need to put in a grant recipient for that in place of the incorrect one?
I do not believe so, but we can double check it with Mr. Steiniger if we need to. Okay.
For the record, Neil Steiniger, Director, Office of Management and Budget. If I could ask for the question to be repeated, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The correct grant recipient for the Kenai River Bluffs Stabilization Project, who would that actually get the cash?
Yes, through the chair, Senator Keel, that'll be the city of Kenai.
Okay. All righty.
Do you want a friendly amendment to your amendment, or are you just going to word it into your amendment?
Senator Michicki.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, I move Amendment 1 to Amendment, Conceptual Amendment Number 1.
I will object for purposes of discussion.
I propose that we add the word City of Kenai before the hyphen.
All right. Insert.
On line 3.
City of Kenai. Okay. And I will remove my objection to the conceptual amendment to the conceptual amendment. Brings us back to the conceptual amendment number 1 as amended. Alrighty, seeing no other questions, conceptual, I will, Senator Schauer.
I will remove my objection.
Thank you, Senator Schauer. Seeing no other objection, conceptual amendment number 1 is adopted. We did, as amended, my apologies. We did not officially close public testimony on SB 166. Is there anyone in the room who wishes to testify on SB 166? Seeing none, just double checking. Looks like everyone online is for questions only. So seeing none, I will close public testimony on SB 166. Are there any further amendments to the working document? Seeing, Senator Keel.
Not an amendment. Something, since there's going to be an adjustment, I think there was a misspelling on Galena. Don't think that takes a motion.
All right. Thank you, Senator Keel. I believe Ledge Legal is empowered to give us the technical changes necessary for that one. All right. Seeing no other amendments, any other comments on the bill before we move forward? Senator Keel.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I will just make one comment, and it's really not a transportation issue. I'm not going to run an amendment or object to moving the bill. The school projects here come down. They get the top 12 on the major maintenance priority list. That's a list that we require by law, and that we have long been assiduous about following, which keeps us out of court with some of the equal protection challenges and the equal rights stuff under the education clause of our Constitution. There are a couple of projects here that don't appear on that list, or at least don't appear at numbers 13 and 14. I think that will, as the bill moves forward, be something that needs to get a hard look in its subsequent committees.
All right. Thank you, Senator Keel. Any further comments? Seeing none, thank you. Senator Schauer, do we have a motion?
I do, Mr. Chair. I move Senate Bill 166, Work Order 32-GS2543/Bravo, as amended, with individual recommendations and forthcoming revised fiscal notes.
Seeing no objection, Senate Bill 166 moves from committee with recommended amendments and forthcoming fiscal notes. Legislative Legal is directed to make any technical or conforming changes or deletions to the suggested language, including the bill title changes, to accomplish the intent of any conceptual amendments to the bill. We'll take a brief Eddie's complete paperwork. Seeing no other business before the committee, that concludes our meeting for today. Our next meeting is going to be Tuesday, May 3rd, with that we are adjourned at 2:29 p.m. Thank you.